There's a reason people fantasize about winning the lottery, and it's not just about money. It's about the fantasy that life has some kind of scoreboard, and that effort and suffering and even virtue might actually cash out in the end. But when you look around at billionaires in space, well, nurses can't pay rent. The whole thing feels like some so-called karmic system that got hacked. And not hacked by some scrappy underdog genius in a hoodie either. More like hacked by a cartel of sociopaths who then sold the cheat codes back to us as self-improvement books. So it's both envy and metaphysical whiplash. Because deep down, I'd wager that most people aren't really asking to be rich. They're just asking for life to make some damn sense. And if the universe had a moral compass, wouldn't it at least gesture vaguely in the direction of fairness? But instead, we've got a slot machine designed by Goldman Sachs, and you don't get to pull the lever because you're actually the collateral damage stuck in the gears. Now, historically, at least, we had stories that patched the hole in the universe. Wealth was like a divine favor, and poverty was punishment. And was it cruel? Of course. But at least it was a narrative. You could squint and say, okay, the rich guy must have earned this in a past life or something. Or maybe the cosmos is just into mega yachts. Now, the mental gymnastics required were Olympic level, but we somehow managed. So, Max Weber wrote about this in his book, The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism. The idea that early capitalism was basically Calvinism with spreadsheets. Success was seen as proof of some kind of salvation, which would mean that Jeff Bezos isn't just rich, he's basically a saint. Though I'd call him the patron saint of free two-day shipping and human bladder control. So if prosperity gospel had a final boss, it would be a guy who owns the Washington Post and won't let his warehouse workers take proper bathroom breaks. And that's the absurd part. Even the metaphysical or theological scaffolding has collapsed. I mean, we're still living inside corporate capitalism as if it's a moral universe, but the morality basically packed up and left sometime around the Reagan administration. So these days, hard work now equals exhaustion without reward, and it usually just means being rewarded with more hard work. Meanwhile, scamming the system, or better yet, owning the system, pretty much equals reward without any discernible effort, beyond having been born at the right dinner table. And people feel that fracture. It's not just economic despair. It's like a spiritual vertigo, or discovering that gravity works backwards, but only for certain special people. And you wake up one day and you realize the universe isn't really keeping score. The karmic contract wasn't breached because it never existed in the first place. It was a fairy tale designed to keep you compliant while someone else looted the so-called temple and then had the audacity to write a friggin' LinkedIn post about their journey. And once you see the wires, once you see the stagehands pulling the levers behind the curtain, the magic trick never really works again. You can't unknow that the wizard is just some guy with a smoke machine and a really good publicist. All right. Here's what I would call the real cosmic joke here. Not only does effort fail to equal reward, but half the effort we're putting in doesn't even matter in the first place. Now, I've mentioned David Graeber at various times in previous videos, and I'll probably mention him again because, well, he understood this predicament all too well. So in his excellent book, Bullshit Jobs, he basically said, look, a shocking number of people know deep in their guts that their jobs are meaningless. And not in the, this is hard but necessary kind of way, but in the, if my role vanished tomorrow, society would continue skipping without a beat kind of way. In fact, society might even actually improve. I mean, we'd have fewer emails at least. And the tragic part is that these meaningless jobs are usually the ones that pay the best. The consultant who consults about consulting, or the middle manager of Synergy, whose main contribution is making meetings 37% longer. The guy whose primary skill set is forwarding emails to people who already got them, with per my last email as his constant battle cry. I think you kind of get the idea here. Now, these people know they're not holding up civilization, but they're rewarded like priests of some modern day economic religion where the sacrament is PowerPoint and the communion is stale conference room bagels. And meanwhile, the people who actually do hold society together, you know, the nurses, sanitation workers, delivery drivers, farm workers, they're treated like disposable labor with expiration dates. And it's funny how these folks were labeled essential workers during the pandemic because, well, society actually realized it couldn't function without them. Unfortunately, their essential status has since evaporated, and it's back to business as usual. I mean, you could almost hear the universe laughing, if the universe actually cared. The less your work matters, the more you get paid. The more vital your work is. Interestingly, the closer you are to poverty. It's like an economic prank show where the punchline is everyone's suffering. So not only is this colossally unfair, it's existential slapstick comedy. I mean, imagine trying to explain this whole situation to an alien anthropologist. Well, yes, The man who cleans toilets lives paycheck to paycheck. But the guy who invented a brand logo in 2012, well, he owns three houses. And one of them is just for his jet skis. And that's just how we keep the karmic system balanced. Now, Graeber argued that this inversion, it isn't accidental. It's necessary to maintain control, or at least the illusion of control. If people doing real work were actually rewarded, the whole illusion of capitalism as a moral system would collapse faster than a crypto scheme. Because then you'd have to admit that we've built a society where people earn fortunes for shuffling digital paper around, while people who save lives can't afford daycare. And what exactly would that say about us? And the worst part is that people know it. We all know it. And that's what makes it spiritually corrosive. It's like acid dripping slowly on your sense of purpose, just eating it away, rather painfully, I might add. And there's nothing quite like laying awake at 2 a.m., realizing that not only does your job not matter, but your boss is paid upper six or seven figures to make sure that you just keep doing it anyway. And tomorrow, you'll get yet another email about team building and company culture, as if pretending to enjoy trust falls will fill the void where meaning used to be. So you end up being spiritually alienated, and you're not rewarded for your value as a human being. You're rewarded for your compliance in the system, for not asking too many questions, and for swallowing your dignity every morning like it's part of the benefits package right next to the dental and that gym membership that you'll never use because you're just too exhausted and you don't have the time anyway. And this does something to people. It doesn't just burn them out. It also hollows them out like a jack-o'-lantern that forgot what Halloween was for. Because on some level, we all need to believe that what we're doing has at least some modicum of meaning, even if it's in the form of some sort of a self-delusion. I mean, we can endure pain and exhaustion and even varying degrees of humiliation if we think it's in service of something larger. But if we have to endure all that shite for PowerPoints, for quarterly reports that no one reads except to justify their own quarterly reports. Not only is that depressing as hell, it's spiritually insulting. It's like we traded in the old cosmic joke, suffering now for reward in the alleged afterlife. We traded that in for a new one, right? But now it's suffering now for no reward at all. But hey, at least you got a lanyard with your company's logo on it and maybe a gold star for being a good little wage slave. Now, here's where the spiritual hangover really starts to kick in. Inequality doesn't just make people broke. It makes them existentially disoriented. Like you're living in a cosmic funhouse where all the mirrors are warped and none of the reflections line up with reality. So Karl Marx talked about this way back in the 1840s. He basically called it alienation. And he didn't mean I feel sad at work today or my boss doesn't appreciate me. What he meant is that you are literally cut off from any meaning of your own existence. You make things that you don't own and that you can't afford to buy. You work on tasks that you don't control. You contribute to a system that doesn't see you as a human being. But it does see you as a battery that can be drained until it's no longer profitable to charge you. And then they'll just toss you away and get a new battery and start all over again. And even if you're one of the so-called lucky ones with a steady paycheck and health insurance that only bankrupts you once in a while, you're still alienated because you're estranged from your labor and from your sense of so-called purpose. And you're also estranged from other human beings, obviously, because the guy next to you isn't really your comrade, he's your competition for the same scraps. It's somewhat like a Kafka novel. If Kafka had been forced to do performance reviews and attend Zoom calls with people who don't understand how to mute themselves. Now, if Marx gives us the clinical diagnosis, Mark Fisher gives us the slow motion horror movie where you realize that the monster isn't coming because it's already here and you've been living inside it the whole time. Now, Fisher wrote about what he called capitalist realism. It's this suffocating sense that corporate capitalism isn't just the dominant economic system, but it's the only conceivable reality. And this is because it's actually become easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism, which is a truly deranged state of affairs when you think about it for more than 5 seconds. So Fisher argued that this total saturation of corporate capitalist logic doesn't just shape our economy, it also colonizes our mental health and our relationships and even our dreams. And depression and anxiety are chemical imbalances potentially leading to personal failures, but they're also rational responses to a system that demands infinite productivity from finite beings. Now, I don't know about you, but that math just isn't mathing to me. You're not broken because you can't keep up with the grind. The grind is broken, and it's breaking you in the process. But instead of actually questioning the system, we've instead been trained to question only ourselves, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because it's important to look within and do the necessary shadow work. But the system nonetheless forces us to pathologize our exhaustion as personal or individual weakness rather than systemic violence, which is what it really is. And inequality supercharges all of this because inequality doesn't just reveal that life is unfair. It reveals that we're trapped in what Fisher calls a business ontology. And that's a reality where everything, including human worth, just gets reduced to, well, market value. Now, the rich aren't proof of some imaginary divine favor, and the poor aren't proof of moral failure. Everyone's just trapped in a system that insists that the only meaningful measure of a life is its profit margin. And if you can't monetize your existence, well, then you're disposable. So naturally, this creates a spiritual dissonance that's worse than simple envy. It's not so much, why don't I have what they have? It's, if the only measure of worth is market value, and I can't generate enough of it, am I even real? What the fuck am I? And, you know, that's the part that no economist ever grasps. I mean, you can chart Gini coefficients and income ratios until you're blue in the face, but how do you chart the feeling of waking up every day and realizing that the entire structure of reality has been outsourced to an algorithm that doesn't even care if you live or die? It's like spending your whole life playing Monopoly only to realize halfway through that the banker's been pocketing money the entire time. Oh, and also the game is actually your entire existence, and there's no other game to play. And suddenly, it's not even about winning anymore. It's about realizing that the game itself is a total fraud, and everyone agreed to pretend otherwise because imagining an alternative feels impossible. So Fisher called this condition a kind of collective depression, a sense that there's no future worth hoping for because the future has already been canceled and replaced with an endless, exhausting present. And I guess the question is, and what do most people do when they feel this way? Well, they either double down on the hustle and grind harder to optimize their suffering, or they collapse into what Fisher called depressive hedonia, also known as anhedonia, which is, it's a condition where you're just going through the motions of pleasure without actually feeling pleasure. It's scrolling, consuming, numbing out, pressing the lever even after the machine stops dispensing food, because what the hell else is there to do? And this is why inequality isn't just an economic issue. I keep driving this point, but it's important. It's also existential vertigo that makes you question whether reality has any internal logic beyond extract value until there's nothing left. So it destabilizes the stories that we tell ourselves about meaning and purpose and about the possibility of change. And when those stories collapse, well, so does our ability to keep going without some combination of antidepressants and gallows humor, or the kind of resignation that feels like drowning in slow motion. Now, Fisher understood that not only was this sad, but it was a form of control. Because if you can convince people that there's no alternative, that this is just how things are and always will be, then you don't really need jackboots and surveillance, do you? people, they'll police themselves and discipline themselves and ultimately exhaust themselves trying to survive in a system designed to make survival feel like a personal achievement rather than a basic right. And that might be the cruelest trick of all here. Okay, so here's the thing about wealth inequality. It doesn't just create financial stress. It also creates moral vertigo. The kind where you're asking questions that sound like they were written by a drunk philosopher in a dive bar at 3 a.m. If working hard doesn't actually get you ahead, then what the hell is the effort for? Is success just genetic luck? Is morality just a branding exercise for people who can afford good public relations? No, good questions. So this is where inequality becomes, again, more than an economic problem. It starts eating away at the metaphysical scaffolding of society like termites in a mansion that nobody noticed was rotting. The unspoken deal was always this. If you play by the rules, make the sacrifices, work hard, and, you know, keep your head down, then you'll be rewarded. But in neo-capitalism, the scoreboard's been smashed with a sledgehammer. Hedge fund managers are making more in a lunch break than a paramedic makes in a lifetime. And somehow we're supposed to believe this is the result of merit and not moral bankruptcy with good lawyers. It's as if the karmic system got hacked and now the universe is run by the same people who run hedge funds. A moral, brutally efficient, and utterly indifferent to your suffering. So, you try to be a wholesome human and do things such as donating to charity, volunteer work, or, I don't know, maybe even rescuing a dog. And your reward is the privilege of living paycheck to paycheck, if you get a paycheck. Well, Jeff Bezos builds a rocket that screams billionaire midlife crisis and calls it innovation. And here's the dark comedy that would make even Kafka weep. People start internalizing this cosmic glitch because if success isn't tied to effort or virtue, then failure must be a personal defect. That's the brainwashing. So it's not the system, it's you. Because you didn't hustle hard enough or meditate correctly or manifest your way into a Tesla with enough intention. And so inequality doesn't just screw people over financially. It basically colonizes their sense of self-worth and plants a flag made of shame. This is exactly what David Graeber was getting at when he wrote Bullshit Jobs. He wasn't just pointing out that many jobs are meaningless. He was showing how this absurd system forces people to live these double lives. You've got one life doing work that feels totally empty, and another is pretending it has meaning because the alternative, admitting that it's all a giant farce, would collapse your entire reality. And most of us can't afford to collapse. We don't have the luxury. We've got bills to pay, rent, whatever, everything. let's be honest. When the nurse saving lives is buried in debt, and the guy making NFTs of cartoon monkeys is buying a mansion, it's hard not to see life as one giant rigged casino. But like, you know, unlike Vegas, at least the casino gives you free drinks while it robs you blind. End-stage capitalism doesn't even give you that. You get a pizza party once a year if your department hits its metrics? All right, this is where, well, we've arrived at the part where wealth inequality stops being just about money and turns into a kind of spiritual acid trip gone horribly wrong. Because humans don't just want money. We want the story that money is supposed to tell us, that our suffering meant to something, that our effort was somehow redeemed, that in the end, there's some kind of cosmic justice system keeping score, even if it's slow and occasionally takes a coffee break or whatever. And we want it even if it's ultimately delusional. It's the narrative we're willing to go along with to make all of this work somehow. But when inequality gets this extreme, the story basically collapses like a house of cards in a wind tunnel. It's like someone ripped the spine out of the book of life, and now we're all just flipping through the pages that just don't add up. So naturally, the whole karmic narrative falls apart. Virtue doesn't pay. Effort doesn't pay. What does pay is being born at the right dinner table, or being just sociopathic enough to monetize other people's desperation without losing sleep over it. And this is where it feels metaphysical, like the universe itself is gaslighting you. Because, well, once people lose the illusion of fairness, they get angry. But they also get disoriented. And they start asking, you know, if hard work and virtue doesn't matter, if justice doesn't exist, then what's left? And that's not a rhetorical question they're hoping you'll answer with a motivational quote. It's not just an economic problem. That's a full-blown existential crisis, the kind therapists charge $200 an hour to help you avoid confronting directly or alone. It's like the universe itself got outsourced to some shady contractor in the Cayman Islands who doesn't return emails. And if you think I'm being dramatic, consider this. When societies lose faith in their metaphysical scoreboard, things get weird and it happens fast. Rome didn't collapse only because of debt and corruption. It also collapsed because nobody believed the so-called gods were on their side anymore. And when the gods stopped keeping score, well, you know, it's game over. And people start worshiping stranger things like emperors, or in our case, these tech billionaires who think they're going to save humanity with AI. And these days, our gods aren't Zeus or Apollo or whoever. They're merit, progress, and anyone still naive enough to believe in the American dream. And when people realize that those gods are dead, or worse, that they never really existed in the first place, Well, they feel betrayed, understandably. It's kind of like finding out your parents lied about Santa, but just kept taking credit for the gifts. So they feel spiritually homeless. And that's when despair really sets in. Not just the I can't pay rent kind of despair, but the what the hell is the point of any of this kind of despair. And that, you know, that's the kind that makes you stare at the ceiling at 4 a.m. wondering if consciousness was a mistake. So extreme inequality does more than just rob people of money. It robs them of a narrative that life makes some kind of sense. And without that narrative, society starts looking less like a community and a lot more like a Hunger Games reboot directed by Kafka, where nobody knows the rules, but everyone's pretty sure they're losing. All right, here's a funny thing about wealth inequality. It doesn't just crush the poor. It fucks with the rich, too. And not in the obvious, I'll never be happy way. Though that's true. But in the insidious psychological sense that comes from living in a world rigged to make everyone feel inadequate, no matter how many zeros they have in their bank account. Think about it. Even if you're rich, you're constantly measuring yourself against someone richer. You never hit the top because the top keeps moving like a finish line on a treadmill designed by a sadist. And furthermore, you have a bottomless pit within that you can never fill. One billionaire launches a rocket into space. Another buys a private island or a yacht that he can park inside of his mega yacht. And meanwhile, the rest of us are just trying to scrape together enough money for a Costco membership and convince ourselves that buying in bulk is a form of financial planning. It's sort of like being on a treadmill that's also a Ferris wheel, somehow going uphill, and the guy next to you is on a jet ski. None of it makes any sense. But everyone's just too exhausted to ask why. And this is why David Graeber's bullshit jobs resonates even outside the office space. And if you zoom out far enough, you can see that people in these meaningless, high-paying roles are, well, they're trapped in the same omnipotent absurdity. They're valued for the wrong things. Status becomes a game of signaling rather than substance. You're climbing a ladder, but the ladder's leaning against the wrong building. And if you pause to ask why, everyone acts like you're the crazy one who just doesn't get it. And meanwhile, the social comparison is constant and exhausting. Social media doesn't help matters. You see everyone's highlight reel, the vacation photos, all the fancy toys, the bizarrely large cats on freakishly large yachts, the I woke up like this photos that took 47 tries and a ring light. I mean, even those of us just scraping by can't escape it. And those who are allegedly winning are trapped in a soulless rat race that doesn't actually get them anywhere meaningful. They're exhausted and anxious and probably quietly terrified of being outflanked by someone with better PR or even a better business card like Patrick Bateman in American Psycho. So success becomes its own kind of prison, just with much nicer furniture. Inequality, then, is a psychological parasite that feeds on everyone. And it gnaws at everyone's sense of fairness and self-worth. So the rich feel hollow. And as George Carlin once said, the poor are there to scare the shit out of the middle class, to keep them showing up for those jobs. So everyone ends up doubting the fundamental idea that life has any structure at all beyond chaos and occasionally a lucky break. And that's why it's not just an economic issue. It's also a metaphysical one, a spiritual one. It's like a slow poison that seeps into how we see ourselves and each other. It's also why societies that tolerate extreme inequality usually see more moral cynicism and the slow rot of empathy, like that forgotten piece of fruit in the back of your fridge. People aren't just angry about paychecks. They're angry about the universe itself. They've noticed the cosmic scoreboard is rigged in that, well, they've noticed that realization, it sticks in the gut like a knife you can't pull out without making things much worse. And once that gut feeling hits, it changes everything. How we interact with each other, and how we imagine the future, how we see ourselves. Because of the system that's supposed to reward virtuous effort and contribution is FUBAR, then what exactly do you have left? What do you have left to believe in? Well, apparently lottery tickets in spite for the most part. Okay. So if the cosmic scoreboard is broken and the karmic system is hacked or whatever, and the universe seems to be run by hedge fund-loving sociopaths with a flair for performance art, what do we do? Do we just lie down and let life grind us into spreadsheets and Amazon boxes? Or is there some way to reclaim meaning, even when the game is rigged and the dealers marked the cards? Well, I think maybe the first step is to acknowledge the absurdity without flinching. You can't fix a system you refuse to see clearly. And pretending everything's fine when it's obviously not is just another form of giving up. It's another form of surrender. Now, David Graeber and Mark Fisher would tell you the same thing. Admit the emptiness. Stare it in the face. And then maybe you can start building something authentic in spite of it. And it takes courage. It's basically the intellectual equivalent of surviving a hurricane by realizing the sky's falling and then laughing anyway. And not because it's all that funny, but because what else are you going to do? Then there's the question of value and what we let dictate our worth. Stop letting money and titles or viral social media moments set the rules for your life. Try to invest in the things that actually matter. Even if the world doesn't notice or reward you for it, like caring for others, cultivating skills that bring joy rather than profit, creating art that nobody asked for or will ever even see. Teaching something that you believe in, or simply being present in the lives of the people you care about. Simone Weil argued that dignity in labor, even the most mundane work, has some spiritual significance. Look, cleaning a toilet isn't going to make you a millionaire, but I think what she was implying is that it can make you a human being who hasn't entirely lost their soul in the machinery of corporate capitalism. And building small communities with like-minded people is also a radical act in a world that's designed to isolate and monetize you. So try to find people who actually value honesty over hustling. You know, people who prefer real connection over capital and curiosity over performance reviews. Now, these networks, they become moral and emotional refuges, like little islands where meaning survives despite the storm of inequality threatening to drown everything else. Now, these are the places where you get to remember what it's like to be seen as a person rather than a productivity metric. And yes, fighting for systemic change, it still matters. Even though it feels like shouting into a void that occasionally shouts back with algorithms. Also, policies like fair wages and wealth redistribution. They're not just economic fixes. They're ways of restoring a sense of societal justice that's been missing for decades. Thomas Piketty and Joseph Stiglitz are a couple of reputable economists who have argued that economies can be redesigned to support both survival and dignity without collapsing into authoritarian nightmares. So even small structural shifts can realign the moral compass of a society teetering on the edge of a collapse. It's not going to fix everything overnight. But you know what? It's better than doing nothing while pretending the market is just going to somehow eventually sort itself out. And finally, as I always say, and always will say, don't underestimate the power of absurdist humor as a survival tool. I mean, life is absurd. It's tragically unfair, and it's often horrifyingly stupid in ways that defy explanation. But nonetheless, humor and laughter is a form of resistance, at least in my book. I see it as a way to survive when everything else is broken and the instruction manual was written in a language that nobody speaks. So, the takeaway here is actually pretty simple, though I know it doesn't feel simple when you're drowning in it. The universe may be utterly indifferent, and corporate capitalism may be some cruel cosmic prank. And yeah, inequality may be metastasizing like a philosophical cancer that nobody wants to treat. But we can still live a meaningful life within it, which I know sounds crazy, but I still think we can find dignity, some sense of meaning, and even joy sometimes, and not necessarily by playing by the rules, but by quietly rewriting your own. Look, this is a world with a totally dysfunctional scoreboard. your small victories, your authentic connections, your acts of care, and creative work that nobody asked for, these become your moral and your spiritual currency. And unlike a billionaire's mega yacht or an NFT of a bored cartoon monkey, those rewards, those are, well, they're rewards that the universe can't take away from you, no matter what. So, write your own rules, even if they only apply to you. Care about what actually matters. And when you glance at the absurd spectacle of billionaires in space and you think, what the hell's the point of this? Try to remember that the point is really just the small, stubborn victories you create in a world designed to strip meaning away like paint thinner on a canvas. And in the end, that's the spiritual currency that no one can tax, no one can steal, and no cosmic slot machine can corrupt. And somehow, even when everything else is falling apart, that feels like enough. Or at least, it's all we've got, so it'll have to be. And today, that's all I've got. As always, thanks for watching.